Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Prison Counts Podcast, where we have a multitude of different perspectives on what it's like to journey through the criminal justice system and to spend life in prison. With over 25 years of combined prison experience, I'm your host, Ryan Ferguson, here, as always, with my good friend and co-host, Dave Dowling. Today's going to be an incredible episode. We're interviewing an old friend from JCCC, Jefferson City Correctional Center, Pat, who's done over 20 years himself and been on national TV shows about his case. Dave, what do you think?
I'm excited to hear from Pat. I haven't seen him in a long time or talked to him. He was a good friend of mine while I was there at JCCC. Helped me a lot. Super smart guy. Super interesting story. So yeah, I'm real excited about Pat.
Yeah, this story has actually been covered by Erin Moriarty. It wasn't on 48 Hours, but it was on the morning show. She also, I think, had him on the podcast. This is one of those stories of disproportionate sentencing. Pat, in 1999, was arrested for robbing, I believe it was four gas stations. Yeah, and he used a fake weapon, which is, you know, in the eyes of the law, same thing as having a real weapon, right, Dave?
Well, in the state of Missouri, implying you have a weapon is the same as having a weapon.
Right. So you're getting 85%. I mean, that's a serious, serious charge. No one was hurt, but he did steal some money and he was charged with first degree robbery, right?
Yeah. Four counts of first degree robbery. First degree means you implied or had a weapon or to do bodily harm. Second degree would be you threatened to beat him up, you know what I mean, with your hands. Now, if you do actually have a weapon, they'll hit you with first-degree robbery and add on armed criminal action.
A lot of people with these same kind of crimes, they go away for 10, maybe 15, 20 years tops. Pat was given 45 years. He served 22 of them. We're going to get into that and how he feels about that, the disproportionate sentencing. I mean, the reality is he committed a crime. You got to do the time. Yeah. But is the sentence correct? That's a debate that we look forward to discussing.
And I think we'll debate that against other sentences, including my own.
That's right? What's really interesting about it.
So, and that's what's interesting, you know. So,
man, I remember in ITC, intensive therapeutic community, I believe it was you and Pat standing next to me. I didn't know Pat that well, but I remember you. We actually, you know, we were friends at that point. Yeah. And they were like, you know, you had to tell the group that came in from the street and tell them about why you were in prison. And you listed off yours. I was like, holy crap, there's quite a few.
You didn't really know, did you?
No, I didn't realize there were that many.
Was that the time the guy in the audience cried, started crying?
Yes.
To get up and leave? Yeah. That was intense.
Yeah, man. It was serious. And it was amazing to see. But, you know, and hearing you say that and then the time you got and then hearing Pat say what he did, which is very similar. And the amount of time he got, which was longer than a lot of the really, really bad stuff that happens that sends people to prison, like murder and robbery where people actually get hurt, things of that nature. Right. It was shocking to me. And I remember that so vividly to this day.
Yeah, very vividly. And the thing about me and Pat just real quickly was Pat had four BB gun robberies, but they're still first degree robberies when he was 19. I had six armed robberies when I was in my early 30s. With two priors and some other stealing drugs, I got 18 years in the St. Louis County, but I had six of them. Four were in the county and two were in the city. The city only gave me 12, but Pat went to St. Charles County, which is the next county over, which is a little more strict, and they offered him 420s. He ended up getting 410s run together, which is 40 years, you know, so he would have had to do 34 years without a governor's intervention. He would still be there right now for another 13 years.
Absolutely. And that is amazing that, you know, he was able to get out in 22 because he was going to have to do a lot more time. But we're going to hop into that. Just a few more stats on Pat, just so you know a little bit about him, because I know once he starts talking, man, this who knows where this conversation is going to go. It's going to be a great interview. But
I think you'll be amazed at his intellect for sure.
For sure. And that's what I was about to say. We both respect Pat so much. He's got his Associate of Arts degree, his bachelor's degree, his MBA, got all that while he was in prison. He's certified at the Library of Congress to be a Braille transcriptionist. That's right, right?
Right. And he looks like howdy doody, and he does not look like an inmate, but he never had any trouble that I'm aware of in prison physically or anything. He's a real likable guy. And what a lot of people don't know really is likability is way better than tough in prison.
For sure. For sure. And you know what? I mean, I've known him for a decade of my life now, at least. And he has always been just a good person, down to earth.
Very decent.
Works hard, stays in his lane.
And helped me very much.
Yeah, he's going to be, you know, he's been out for 5 months, man. I think he's going to be an amazing asset to society. I think he's going to do a lot of good.
Well, one thing for sure, I feel like Pat's still at an age in his life where he can be really whatever he wants to be, and he'll make it happen. I mean, he knows how to go through the hoops and be patient.
He does, and he's a hard worker. So, man.
He's home today.
And without further ado, let's bring Pat in and get this party started. All right. Hey, Pat, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, glad to be here, fellas. Glad to be here.
Good to see you, Pat. Good to hear you. Been a while.
Yes, it has. A little too long. Is that a real thing?
Too long indeed.
I don't know about too long. It's been a while. Let's just say that.
Way too long. I think the last time all of us saw each other was in the old Pokey. That was years and years and years ago. We've all been out now for some time. Actually, today is my 8 years out. Pat, you've been out for, what, about 5 months now?
Yeah, about 5 months. Oof.
What's the experience like, man? I feel so far displaced from being freshly out. It was a whirlwind for me. How do you feel?
Overwhelmed. You know, so many things have changed in 20-something years. It's crazy. Technology is just amazing, frustrating, incredible, you know, pretty much every adjective you can think of. So just getting used to everything again is quite the challenge.
Ooh, I got bad news for you, man. I'm still trying to figure out technology. And you're a little quicker than me. So what about you, Dave? You've been out for how long now?
I can do Facebook. I can get sports scores and look at porn. So I'm doing pretty good. I've got it down.
And it took you how long to figure that out?
About 3 months.
No, but I forget. How long have you been out?
About a year.
Oh, you've been out a whole year already?
Not quite, but almost.
I knew it's been a long year. Jeez. Yeah,
long.
And so, Pat, man, you know, I want to talk about being freshly out of prison, especially with you, because you're highly educated. What's your education and what's your experience been like job hunting?
Well, I mean, educationally, as you know, I got my associates from Ohio University while I was incarcerated, then got my bachelor's, and then got my master's in business administration, my MBA, right before I got out, which kind of helped me get out. And I kind of figured that, you know, I didn't expect to launch into a career, you know, incredible job upon being released, but I kept hearing about the labor shortage and thought, oh, this is going to be easy. I got an MBA. Yeah, not so much.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, it should be easy. I mean, you served your time more than you should have. And you have this incredible education. You haven't gotten in trouble anytime in the last 20 years. And yet it's still difficult to find a quality job.
Yeah, basically, I feel like society is telling me I'm qualified to flip burgers or work in a warehouse. That's what my master's has gotten me so far.
That's nuts. That's
well, it's nuts. Been, you know, somewhat kind of the same experience for me, because the job that I do now, I drive a tow truck, and they want to do a background check on you. So what I had to do is just start going in and just telling them, hey, I got in trouble 20 years ago and I can drive this truck. So if you're going to make a big deal about me getting in trouble 20 years ago, then I won't drive the truck. But right now, because so many people need a truck driver, I'm getting jobs. But of course, those are still blue collar jobs, you know, but I don't have the education that you have. So I can imagine it'd be even harder trying to get into the corporate structure.
Yeah, I definitely feel like the route to go is going to be my own business. You know, having been rejected by so many companies time and time again. And basically, you know, even the last one I had, which was a financial firm, I passed all their aptitude tests with flying colors, did 3 different interviews with them, including a Zoom interview, flew through everything. And then they get to the background check and they're like, we know this was 22 years ago, but, you know, we wish you the best of luck.
Well, I think it'd be easier for guys like us with, you know, personalities, guys who are articulate and can clean up, other than maybe some other guys who have, you know, way less education. Maybe their IQs are lower. Maybe they're suffering from mental illness and things, you know. Their way to go seems to be even worse. So I try to count my blessings on stuff. At least I can sell myself if I get face-to-face, you know.
That's true. And you know, at that point, I can't imagine getting out of prison after doing 2 decades plus and not having a support network. You know, if I wouldn't have had a support network getting out, I'm not sure what would happen to me. So I'm not so sure the prison does a fabulous job of preparing someone to reenter society after decades.
You're not so sure about that, Pat? Do they do anything to prepare people? I mean, honestly, do they do much of anything? They certainly didn't for me.
No, absolutely not. Most of the programs that came about in Missouri came about because the feds say, hey, we got money if you start these programs. So the prison scrambles to find somebody and be like, hey, do you want to head this program so we can get this money? And, you know, most of the time, 99% of them don't care anything about inmates. There's a few that actually do, to be, you know, fair. But the majority are just like, hey, whatever, you know. And then they give the program to some inmate to run and just say, take care of it. And that's typically how those things work out.
Every prison's kind of like someone with two separate personalities, like, you know. And because half the, you know, one side of the prison staff is penal punishment. This is punishment. They don't deserve anything. They shouldn't even be able to use the phone. Da 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 da. Hard line. And then you got the other side, who's corrections, and they want you to have the classes, and they want you to be able to earn things while you're there. Of course, I fall on that side. I think that's the best management tool, anyway. You know, you should be able to earn freedoms, or what do you say, privileges? You know, certain privileges. And at a point while we were there, you know, when we had Dave Dormiles, a warden, you could earn privileges. You know what I mean? You did. But then as he left and things shifted, they started snatching them all back, you know, and almost villainizing guys who wanted to do program stuff.
Right. Well, the fact remains that most people who are in prison today in the United States are going to get out at some point. And we're not preparing people for that reality. We're not creating an environment where they can learn things. They're not giving you education in most institutions. They're not preparing you for what it's like to get out, or even creating opportunities for people once they do get out. So, I mean, what do they expect to happen? I think that's my biggest gripe with the criminal justice system.
I was baffled when I was at the Jefferson City Correctional Center, the newest prison in the state, Supermax. And when budget cuts come, they got rid of the education department.
Right.
Literally got rid of it. All the teachers that were paid, hey, you're fired.
Yeah, I tutored in it because they got rid of all the teachers. And
it makes no sense whatsoever. Budget cuts. Okay, we're going to cut education because you guys don't need it anyway. It's baffling. If prisons were a company, they would not work, because the recidivism rate, I think 5 years out, is up in the 80 percentile.
I don't think they look at it that way, though. I think it's...
Oh, they absolutely don't.
They're to house bad people, period.
Well, I mean,
it's like most guards will tell you, we're here to keep you inside the fence. That's it.
Well, that's the end of the day. That's their main job. Make sure you don't get out. All right. Well, that's a good lead into a question that we're going to be talking about here, which is how much time did you actually get, Pat? And how much time did you actually do?
So I was convicted of 4 counts of first degree armed robbery, as well as 4 counts of armed criminal action. And I was sentenced to 10 years on each count, which was a total of 80 years. The way they structured it, it came out to 40 years, because 4 of the 10-year sentences were ran consecutive. And they want you to do 85% regardless of anything. Therefore, out of that 40 years, they wanted me to do 34 before I could become eligible for parole.
Now, when you say armed criminal action, what were you armed with?
Armed with a BB gun, a fake gun.
And was anyone hurt in the process of these robberies, or like how did
physically
those go? Yeah.
No, I did not physically touch anyone. I understand the mental anguish that I caused 100%.
Which must be great, right?
I would imagine. 100%. And I never argued that I shouldn't have been in prison. You know, I didn't drag out the process or anything like that. I, you know, admitted to what I did. So I would not be the person to say that I didn't deserve to go to prison. My issue is, if I kill someone and get a life sentence in Missouri, I have to do 25 and a half years before I'm eligible for parole with a life sentence. And yet I don't touch anyone. It's my first time in prison. And you want me to do 34 flat, 34 before I can even get a chance to get out? And not only do you want me to do 34, but anything I do during that 34-year period has no bearing on getting me a parole hearing earlier. I just have to do 34 years.
Well, that's really where I got interested in your story, Pat, because we had met and we'd become friendly. And when I heard how much time you got for half of what I was in there for basically the same plus other things. I only got 18, which I say only to someone out there listening, be like, only 18, bro. But when you're looking at other guys who have life sentences, and this one, I heard about you and you were younger than me and had no record. I had a previous record. And here I am doing 18, getting 18. I had to do 15, and you've got 40 and have to do 34. Well, there's something wrong with that. You know, I mean, that the discrepancy there is too great. That's double.
You know. I would agree with that. And one of the internal struggles that I had to deal with as I was there in prison was looking at other individuals like, okay, I lived next to a guy who chopped somebody's head off and he had a 10-year sentence. And then he moves out and you get a serial child molester in there that has a 15-year sentence, you know, and then you see
with 0%.
Yeah, with 0%. 0%. And it's just, there's no balance to the system. You know, I tell people, I think that the scales of justice, you know, you have Lady Justice holding up the scale. She's blindfolded. It has nothing to do with impartiality. It has to do with she's so sad at what the system's turned into.
On another subject, Pat. So we're talking about prisons, but I want to know what your thoughts are between the prison and the county jail. How long were you in the county jail, and what, because this is just something that I think is really interesting to most people. So like, what is it that's different between county jail and prison, and what was worse for you? Like, if you had to do time, where would you rather do it?
Well, I mean, county jail in Missouri is when you have a sentence that's a year or less. If you do anything more than a year, you have to go to an actual prison.
And you're also waiting to be tried in the county jail, right? So you're innocent until proven guilty, but stuck in the county jail.
Absolutely right. And the county jail for me was crazy because I was so young. I didn't understand what was going on as far as the implications it was going to have on my life. I saw everybody else getting all these, you know, sentences that were, I'm thinking, oh, you know, okay, I'm going to be fine. I'm seeing murderers get, you know. And when you get your sentence, you think to yourself, oh, my God, that's such a long time. Even to the person who gets the sentence, 5 years is a long time. So until they actually hammered the gavel on my sentencing and said you were going to do all this time, it was a blur. But once they sentenced me, everything just slowed down, and I came to the realization that they want me to do more time in prison than I've lived my entire life.
Man. You know, the county jail – to prison comparison is, you know, once I left in county jail in 10 months, I got in, I don't know, 15 fights, which is 12 more fights than I got in 15 years in prison. I got in three fights while I was actually in prison, three fights in 15 years, county jail, 15 fights in 10 months. Right. And it was chaotic. It was unsanitary. County jail was, you know, it was the hardest part of my sentence.
I would agree with that because, you know, you're just dipping your toes into the criminal, you know, the whole prison experience. You don't know what to do. You don't know who you are, where you fit in with anything. And you don't know how you have to respond to everything. And all you have in your mind really are these thoughts of Hollywood and how everything is stereotyped as far as what you need to do, which, you know, I've got plastic plates and screws in my face because of an altercation that happened in county jail. I had nothing that bad happen in actual prison.
Right. And I think that's why it's important to talk about the county jail, because that is, like I said earlier, innocent until proven guilty. You're trapped in there. And, you know, it's a very volatile, unsanitary place. What, if you don't mind my asking, Pat, what happened in the county jail? I mean, I know you're new there, you're fresh, you don't know how to deal with that environment. I certainly didn't. Nobody does. I mean, it's easy to get in a really tough situation, I'd imagine.
Well, you know, that particular situation, an individual had made a comment that could have been construed one way or the other way. And I chose it to think, well, I'm not going to become a victim. I'm going to err on the side of caution. He'd made a sexual remark. So being 130, 135 pounds, I went and got one of those 10-pound mop ringers and got it behind him and hit him in the back of the head with the mop ringer.
Ooh.
I was determined that he was not going to assault me in any way, shape, or form. So I did what in prison we refer to as getting down first.
Getting down first, i.e. trying to survive. I mean, basically is what it comes down to, right? Because if you feel like someone's going to attack you and sexually assault you, did you feel like you had other options?
No, there were no other options.
And you can't go anywhere. You can't tell the CEO. You can't be like, hey, I feel threatened here. Please let me go. No. Like
that. Yeah.
Well, you can certainly do that. But, you know, when you go and ask, and a lot of people might not know they're listening, when you go and ask for protective custody, well, they put you in the hole. That's the protection. They put you in the hole. So if you get in trouble for doing something, you go to the hole. If you need help, you go to the hole. So either way, you're going to the hole.
Which means you basically lose everything. All what little few rights you have, you're losing them. You're sitting in a box for the next year, 2 years, 10 years. Meanwhile, when you get out of that box, because you checked in, nobody's going to respect you. People are going to come after you, and you're going to have to fight anyways.
The stigma will never leave.
You know, looking back on it, it helped me with regards to the rest of my prison time, because a lot of the people who were there when I did it ended up in Jefferson City with me.
Right, right.
But on the negative side, after the guy got out of the hospital, him and one of his friends jumped on me, and that's where I got all the plates and screws and things of that nature. So,
yeah, dangerous business. I mean, I know a dangerous business. I remember just so many different violent things that I saw while I was in there, you know. And then the other thing that is, I hope we'll have a topic on this later, and I'm sure we will, which will be what ADSEG time or what whole time does to a person mentally and emotionally. You know, and one of our guests that we're going to have on, he's going to talk about doing years in isolation.
Yeah, I did 13 months in isolation at the old prison down in 3C, which was underground. You know, it's the stereotypical little window way high up where you can see some light streaming in. And
so you were the bird man of Mid-Missouri, basically.
Yeah, look, rats and mice crawling by. It's just like, oh my God, is this real? 13 months I did down there for something I was suspected of doing. So, you know, isolation like that has a way of really changing you, for sure, for sure.
Were you able to train a magical mouse while you were down there? Did anyone bring anything back to life while you were there with their hands?
No, maybe my spirit, you know, that's.
You do have to train your spirit. You got to bring that back alive.
Did the sisters try to get up on you?
They did not. Shawshank did not happen.
No. It all happened to me.
I got very lucky, you know, my.
You wanted it to happen, Dave. Come on.
I trained a magical bird that would crap on me every time I went out to smoke a cigarette on the yard. It was magical.
I think that one got me one.
My early years in prison were interesting because I chose, you know, the route. People were trying to get me to join different, you know, organizations, shall we say, prison gangs. But I chose not to, which kind of steered me into a group of people that were like, oh, okay, this is how you're going to be. And I think I was just lucky to be myself and fall into a good group of people, which, as we all know, you know, good people tend to group together with other good people. It just happens.
Birds of a feather.
Know, naturally. Yeah, it's a very organic process in prison. You tend to hang around people of similar ilk. So I attribute the fact that some of the early friends I made during my prison time is probably what kept me from a lot of drama. So I'm very, very thankful for a lot of the friends I met early on.
I agree with that. And a question to both of you, both were locked up longer than me, did harder time than me for sure. Do you think that if we weren't in Jefferson City Correctional Center in Missouri, do you think that that would have been an option? Say you're in California or a New York prison. Don't you kind of have to join up with somebody? Because we had the option of either joining up or actually kind of living our own little lives. And we all chose that. So how do you think that plays out?
I'll take the lead on that with you, Ryan. I mean, things changed. You know, I first came down and started getting locked up in the late 80s and the early 90s. And when I came in, there weren't different gangs. You were a part of where you came from. You were either a St. Louis guy, which most Lee in Missouri was referred to as a Southsider, or you were a Kansas City guy, which was a Northeast. She was more of a territorial thing. You're from the Boot Hill, you're a Boot Hill guy. You're from St. Louis, you're a St. Louis guy. You know, before meth had came and a lot of people from the different rural areas came into prison, it was just the city guys mostly in prison.
I mean, look, it's either, prison is either going to make you or break you. You know, it's one of the two. And it's a sad situation when you spend 2 decades of your life in such a horrible place. And there's definitely things you can't unsee. When I was at the walls, I saw a guy get stabbed so bad that when the guy got him down on the ground, you could hear the knife hitting the concrete underneath the body. as he was stabbing through him, all you heard was chink, chink, chink. Hmm. And that's one of the things, you know, I'll never forget. And, you know, seeing things like that changes you, without a doubt. And how it changes you, it's up to you. But you can't go through 22 years in an environment like that and not come out with some sort of PTSD, for lack of a better term.
That's what I was going to ask you. Do you feel like you suffer from any of that post-traumatic stress? Or do you have anxiety in crowds or situations now that you're home?
You know, I feel like I transitioned a little better than most, because I always did my time with the thought that I am going to get out of here one day. I do not want to become institutionalized. Anytime I would get the opportunity to talk to anyone who was not in prison, who would come in, I would jump at the chance because, hey, I want to see, can I carry on a conversation with you as an adult with some level of intelligence? You know, I don't want to be the stereotypical, you know, when I met Erin Moriarty and she came in to do my interview, the first thing, or one of the first things she said was, "You're not what I expected. I don't see you, you know, where are your tattoos?" Things of that nature. And
that's me too. I don't have any tattoos. Ryan, you have any tattoos?
Not that you've seen.
But here's the thing though. You do all that time, you know, the deck is stacked against you, and it's further stacked against you when you start putting tattoos on your face, when you start talking a certain way, when you, you know, have a certain attitude. So you have to work every day to keep yourself from becoming institutionalized so that you can acclimate back into society. The best compliment that I've gotten since I've been out of prison was from my brother's friends, who said, "Wow, if you didn't know that Patrick did 22 years in prison, you would never know that he ever went to prison." Best compliment I've gotten since I've been free.
Yes, and I agree with that. I think why we gravitated towards one another, each of us and a few other good friends that we have, was because we didn't want to become prison. I had to do prison, and I did do prison. I'm proud of the way I did prison. You know, I didn't victimize people in prison. I did what I was supposed to do. I got out of it as much as I could get out of it, and I left it there when I walked out the door. I didn't come home thinking I'm tougher than anyone else, or you should be scared of me now. I don't want you to be scared of me. I'm trying to get a job.
Well, I feel like when you're in prison, you have to make such a big deal out of who you are, as far as, I need you to maybe not fear me, but you are going to respect me. And if you don't have that attitude from people, then you are very, very likely to become a victim. And when you get out of prison, if you can't transition to the fact that you want everybody to see you as a real person, not as a convict, you're not going to make it. If you spend your time going around trying to scare people with your prison stories and look tough, guess what? You're going to be right back in prison. I don't want people to know that I went to prison. When you meet me, I want you to look at me as a human being. I want you to see me on an even plane and judge me based on who you see in front of you, not the person that I was or the acts that I committed some 20-something years ago.
Absolutely.
Man, that's actually such a good way to end the episode. I think it's so important that I think a lot of people who are coming back into society, ties back into how we started, you know, they want to live their lives new, starting fresh. They've done their time. A lot of people, such as yourself, Pat, highly educated. You worked really hard on yourself. Dave, I know you did the same thing, worked hard on yourself, learned a lot, came out wanting to do good in society. And it's still, even then, even with all that work, those hard years, 10, 15, 20 years of hard work, society still makes it tough. And you just want society to take you at face value of what you're doing now and what you've accomplished and what you can offer to their work or whatever community you're in.
And one thing about that attitude and the attitude I have now is, it's not I'm going to follow the rules today and do right if I get my way. That was my way when I was a young, immature human being with a terrible attitude. Today, regardless of what goes my way, I'm going to do the next right thing. You know, whether it's popular, whether I get a good job or I'm sweeping floors, because I'll tell you, there were times in my prison, but I'd have loved to have a nice job at McDonald's eating cheeseburgers, I'll tell you what. So I keep it in perspective and remember where I've been and what everyone owes me, which is, you know, nothing.
Perspective is extraordinarily important. It's like you say, I worked a warehouse job overnight, you know, covered in plastic, coming home, 12-hour shifts, and I hated it. But my worst day in society is so much better than my best day in prison. It's really that simple.
Well said.
Damn right, Pat, man. Couldn't have said it better myself. Like most things, you're so eloquent, and we appreciate you coming on here and sharing your thoughts and feelings with us.
Absolutely, fellas. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Good to see you again. Good to hear your voice again. Hopefully we'll have you back sometime and discuss other topics, because there's plenty of them.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
22 years makes you an expert.
Love you, fellas. Take care.
You too. Be good. So, Ryan, that was a pretty good talk with Pat. Boy, it's really good to see him. I see he's still the same. You know, he's got a lot to say, and he's done a lot of things. It's still a little emotionally raw with him.
Definitely,
and sometimes Pat and your situations have a similarity, but they're not the same. It's one thing when you didn't do anything and end up with 40 years. It's another thing when you did do a bunch of things and end up with 40 years. Now, sure, other people got less, and we don't know the circumstances behind all those. But at the same time, my dad used to tell me, hey, you went knocking on their door.
Yep.
They didn't come knocking on yours. Now, in your case, Ryan, they came knocking on your door.
They sure did.
You know, so, and it's those cliches. You can't do the crime or the time, don't do the crime. That's all true. And it's hard for me as a person who committed dangerous felonies to downplay the impact on the victims, even if I didn't have a weapon, because they didn't know I didn't have a weapon. They thought if they didn't give me the money, they were going to lose their life. You know, and that hit me when I sobered up and started talking to people, because to me, it was a game. I knew I wouldn't hurt them and all this. But the judge, my judge in my case, told me, when you put a gun on me, that means I either give you the money or you kill me. You know, so it's relative, you know, and I've become a little more sensitive to that type of thing. I don't say that maybe a guy should get less or doesn't have a right to fight for it. I think prison needs some work. At the same time, I also know guys that really don't need to ever get out.
And I think that leaves us with such a great question to today's episode is, you know, he is guilty of the crimes that he committed. Did he get oversentenced? I believe so. Do a lot of people get oversentenced?
So.
Yes. But at the same time, where is that fine line? Can you or I say exactly where that is and exactly how much time he should have gotten?
Correct. No. Now, from a point of view of a person who's done a lot of time, to hear a person got 10 years is not the same as a person who has actually done those 10. And I'll tell you, those 10 don't fly by. You know,
they do
property
not.
Crimes and stuff. I mean, when you're getting up in these double digits, it's serious business. And I would like to see, and this is kind of off the point, but for some of these people under 30, how about some prison boot camp? And if you pass that, you get to take a shot at real Army boot camp and start building some self-esteem and structure in some of these young guys' lives. You know, I'm an advocate of that. You know?
I am too, dude. And I think you bring up a great point is a lot of people who end up in prison never had structure. They don't have family. They don't have support. And they do things that and sometimes are part of survival. They don't know any better. I mean, there's just so many circumstances that lead to them committing crimes and going to prison. So if you give people an option to grow and maybe put them in service as opposed to just locking them in a cage, you will get more out of those people in society and give them a second chance, a real second chance at life. Because a lot of people want to do right. They want to grow. They want to be better. They want to have good lives.
Young men in their 20s. Right. Young men in their 20s are going to get trained by someone in an institution. You're either going to get trained by trained professionals like military people who can train you to use your anger in the right way and use your judgments and start having structure in your life that's good. Or you can get trained by career criminals who will teach you how to do things and make you feel like if you don't do tough stuff, and they'll use them, give them identity with these tattoos and stuff, and create these monsters that don't want to get out and they're just professional people that want to hurt society. 22-year-olds sitting around a wing all day gambling and doing all this silly shit and fighting and tattooing. What is that helping anyone? It's not even punishment, you know?
So I think that's a good place to leave it, Dave, actually.
Because prison counts. It can count. You know, it counts for something.
Can.
It's going to count against the bad or it's going to count against the good.
I mean, for sure. So let's leave that with you guys. What do you think? We'd love to hear your comments and thoughts. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. Do you think that people should have the opportunity to go into a boot camp type of situation, whether it's just within prison or actually in the military, which I do believe would be better. But, and I can't wait to hear. I think there's going to be some really creative comments.
I'm really interested to hear what people have to say, but I hope they put some thought into it or put their own brother into the situation and think about what you would think when, or something, you know, in that vein. I don't know everyone's brother, of course, but
right, man. Well, what a good episode, man. One that is so thought provoking and leaves us with a good question. I feel like, you know, if we can talk to everybody, and you know, some are going to be super entertaining, you hear wild stories, and some are going to leave us questioning different things within our criminal justice system and the way it operates, and maybe getting us to think outside of the box, because Absolutely. This is our criminal justice system in the United States. We have to own it. We have to make it better. Right. And it does need to be better.
And so, we can't let our own injustices in our life cloud our judgment about society as a whole or the justice system as a whole. You can't say it isn't working and doesn't work when you have no alternative plan.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, you can say there's failure and flaws. Of course, there's human beings running it. You have to have a system that would work to replace another system. You know. Anyway.
Absolutely.
I think it's not a good system. I'm not that smart for all that.
Absolutely. No, it's not a good system, but it's not the worst system either.
It's not the worst system, and there are good people in there. You know, there are good people working in the Department of Corrections trying to help people, and they're not making much money, and it's a dangerous situation.
For sure. And I do not
we'll talk about that too. No, because you're not going to get professionals at $28,000 a year.
No, you're not. So yeah, I mean, and that's what we look forward to having COs on here, correctional officers, people who
Absolutely.
Work inside.
I got one in mind who said he would do it, and I'm interested to speak with him when he gets a chance.
Well, he's coming up, and we're going to talk to police officers. We're going to talk to former prosecutors and judges. So that's the thing we're going to talk to everybody related to the criminal justice system. There are good people surrounding the criminal justice system that operate the justice system, but there's also a lot of bad ones, you know? And so we want to talk to both. We want to shine a light on both sides.
Absolutely. I wouldn't want to be on any show that was just one sided and I'm a victim. And even though I can't sit here and say I've done all these crimes and I'm a victim of something. I'm not a victim of something. All right. But there are people out there that are being victimized by the system. And there are people out there on the streets that aren't being helped by a system by not punishing people who are doing terrible things. You know, so there's a lot, there's a big spectrum here.
A huge spectrum, and I think so much of it is so debatable, and it's going to be fun to have that debate with everyone listening and on our forum. So we look forward to your thoughts, feelings, advice, concerns, and let us know what you want to hear more about on these episodes, what you want to hear less of, and we're going to keep working to be better and bring more thoughtful, entertaining commentary to you guys.
Absolutely. Thank you all so much for listening, and thank you, Ryan, and we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely, Dave. Till next time, we'll see you guys later.
See you later, all.